The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
You're listening to Business is Boring, a podcast that reckons it's anything but. Business is Boring is brought to you by Spark Lab, offering inspiration and practical advice to help businesses find their edge. To hear more about Spark Lab, including details about the latest events, workshops, and business tools, visit sparklab.co.nz. And now, here's your host, Simon Pound.
Kia ora koutou katoa. Welcome to Business is Boring. The amount of food we waste is staggering. About 30% of what is grown never leaves the fields due to cosmetic or size imperfections. Time, energy and care has gone into the growing, and it's kind of bananas we're so far into a connected economy and the solutions are only now coming up. One of the forerunners trying to fix this is Wonkybox. What started as a bolt of inspiration while fruit picking and seeing the waste has led to a now national food box service delivering wonky but great produce to people that has saved 2 million kilograms of waste. To talk the journey, the problem and what's next, co-founder Angus Sims joins us now. Tanakwe, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Simon.
Hey, so first up, tell us how you came across this problem.
Yeah, so my partner and I, Katie, who founded Wonkybox, we were living overseas in the UK. You can probably tell by my accent, I've actually picked up on one pretty a pretty full on English accent. I lived there for about 10 years, in fact, but I am Kiwi born from Wellington, and I suppose living there, we were always at the forefront of committing to, you know, initiatives like similar to Wonkybox. There were products in all supermarkets across the UK, and you know, you've got half a dozen retailers there that are all involved in food waste initiatives. It's very forward thinking, as well as sort of in Europe. When we spent time in Europe, we were seeing it there as well. In particular, in this food space, upcycling, reusing of foods or upcycling of products that might be deemed as waste but could be used for consumption. And it although we weren't involved in it from a working perspective, we were just, you know, living in it and into it. Yeah. So it was always kind of a thing that we'd known and just kind of learnt from being present. And then, you know, mid-COVID when we moved back to New Zealand, it was something that we just didn't see being an everyday thing when we did move back. And in particular, I suppose we never, you know, it was never our intention to come back to New Zealand and start Wonkybox necessarily. It was only when we were actually working in the South Island on a couple of orchards and we did a hop season harvest. We were, you know, playing in that sort of seasonal workspace over the summer of 2021 where we were kind of seeing it firsthand, the actual issues that local producers, farmers in particular, were facing when they were trying to sell their produce. And then, you know, that kind of, during that period, it kind of clicked like, oh, these are the problems that those initiatives overseas are solving, which is, you know, really, really neat. And kind of what we ended up doing was realizing that there wasn't that many programs or initiatives locally here doing that. So, yeah, that's where it kind of stemmed.
Isn't that wild? Was there anything in particular, like any particular moments that kind of galvanized you? As it's kind of, you know, these ideas, we hear these things like, you know, 30% of food is wasted and, you know, X 100,000 ton is, and it's hard to kind of get your head around it. But when you actually see perfectly good cauliflower left to rot or be ploughed back into the ground because mm-hmm. it happens to be just a little bit big, mm-hmm. that's something that's like, it really goes against your sense of what's kind of right in the world, right, when you see it up close.
Yeah, it definitely does. And for us, I think like a key moment was when we were in Richmond, just on the outskirts of Nelson, and we were working there, and we were actually working throughout sort of the holiday season, like Christmas, New Year period as well. And there was an infamous Boxing Day or hailstorm that fell upon a lot of orchards and a lot of farmland back in 2021. And that was when it really kind of kicked in, because it wasn't just the places we were working, but we had a lot of friends down there working that summer too. And suddenly, we all woke up that day to go do our fruit picking and so on. But the next 2 days, no one had any work, because the growers in particular were actually talking about particular orchards that couldn't be picked for various reasons, because suddenly, like, the fruit, which was still in its infancy, like we were doing stringing, we were doing all these pre-harvest tasks at the time, weren't actually able to be picked later on, maybe in like the next couple of months, especially when the apple season kicks in into like late Feb, March. So what we noticed was that there was this huge sort of cull back on where we were going to start stringing certain fields, certain paddocks, certain orchards, just simply because the grower knew that, hey, this particular crop, yes, the fruit's still got to mature, it's still got to grow, but it's going to have markings on that they can't export for whatever reason. So it was just, yeah, it hit home just a little bit, because we would just realized then and there, this is where a solution like Wonky Box would come into play. And to be honest, we kind of knew about the Odd Bunch program that was happening at Countdown, but we weren't seeing a lot of people picking up on it, or we didn't see a lot of people mentioning that was in particular what they were going to the supermarket for and so on. So yeah, it was that pivotal moment where I think we really started to dig a little deeper into the problem.
And if anyone who has visited an old growth orchard or a house that has old fruit trees or has done their own gardening, often the most tasty and exciting kind of produce you can have is the stuff with the blemishes. It is the stuff that has, is misshapen. It's not the stuff that looks like a perfect apple mm-hmm. in the supermarket, right? And so it's actually kind of wild as well that we've optimized this whole system for aesthetics and size and not nutrition and taste. And so it's also really cool to have, like, a view where pits or blemishes are part of nature.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think it's definitely something that's present in particular here in New Zealand because of the sort of lack of competition, let's say, at a retail level. We've got the duopoly, you've got Progressive, you've got Foodstuffs. And I think having such a sort of limited amount of competition in that space, these two can really, battle it out as to who's got the best looking produce on the shelves and things like that. And, if you had six or half a dozen retailers, the specifications, the expectations might be slightly looser in terms of what you would expect to go into a supermarket and get. But because there is just such limited competition, they can be quite picky as to what they want to have on their shelves, if that makes sense.
And the export gearing as well, right? Because mm-hmm. you only export things that fit a perfect image.
Absolutely, and a lot of that also, a lot of it comes down to practicality as well, Simon. So you've got, specific type of packaging that sends out these particular types of products overseas. So like if that kiwi fruit, that piece of kiwi fruit or that apple doesn't fit the cartons in a particular way, then yeah, very much so, then they're not going to send that overseas. So it's not just, it's not just sort of scars, kind of like, scratches and so on. It's literally sizes and shapes that, can get even a little bit more fussy when it comes to export markets and so on.
And isn't that wild? Because at any other time across our history as people doing agriculture, if you got a apple that was a bit bigger or a broccoli that had, more florets or something, that's a bonus, right? Like, there's more food.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, this is what a lot of people seem to think that's baffling, and I do too. But again, it tends to always come down to the practicality piece. Like if you're a grower, you're growing broccoli, let's say, for example, you distribute that broccoli into crates, and those crates move through a supply chain and end up on a retail shelf. What happens is, you're growing to a specific size, let's say 20 in a box or 20 in a crate, and suddenly if the weather comes on too soon, then your broccoli's growing too big and you can only suddenly fit 10 into the crate. Nothing changes in terms of the distribution costs for that grower. So the grower's spending the exact same amount of money getting it to the retailer than he would crate that filled twice as many. So then what's happening is, you know, you as a consumer, you go into a supermarket, you're going to have to, you're forced to either pick one or two. You're not able to pick half a broccoli necessarily. But, you know, naturally that way, because the costs are still the same throughout the distribution, is it probably hinders as to whether or not a grower is going to think, is it worth sending this gear that's too large? Because by the time it hits the retail shelf, instead of being a $2 broccoli, the supermarkets are going to charge it out at $4. So like a lot goes into the whole supply chain piece and how product is moved throughout the supply chain, and that also determines whether or not the stuff gets wasted, basically.
Isn't that wild that this like focus on standardization is leading to so much waste, and you know, just a particularly productive couple of days growing can ruin and change the entire economics of a harvest, you know, and or unproductive as well, right? Like if it's too small. And so having kind of seen this, like, you know, absolutely bananas situation, how did you go about changing it? Because changing the food system's a pretty big thing for two people to do in a van, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be honest, I think back then when we started it, we probably didn't really know what we were in for, if I'm going to be honest. But yeah, no, it did very much start out in that way, very bootstrapped kind of model. Katie and I, we returned to my hometown, which is in Wellington. And, you know, I'd always known about the Kapiti Coast and the Horowhenua, which is where, you know, predominantly a lot of greens, a lot of root crops, brassicas are grown, and a lot of the market gardeners who would be growing there in their patches and in their fields would be bringing that produce into Wellington and selling it, you know, various markets. You've got Newtown Market, Harbourside Market, you've got the Hutt Markets and so on over the weekends. And the moment for us, I suppose, was we came back and we would go and drive our van up to the coast. We by this point, just for the record, we stripped out the bedding, we stripped out, you know, all the kitchen units and so on. We weren't kind of mixing a bed with picking up produce by any means. We figured that we would go out there and just simply knock on these farmers' doors and try and get their take on it. And
so you turned the van that you'd been living in while you were fruit picking into a van to like move produce around and help try to solve this problem.
Exactly. Cool. You know, we bunked up at my parents' and eventually a good mate of mine's in town just to rent at his, and we literally used the van to go on these missions, if you like, to try and dig a little deeper into the problem and you know, the solution potentially as well, knowing that eventually if the boxes made sense, we'd be able to deliver them in the boxes and so on. It wasn't until, I suppose, we found a particular vendor, a grower who was selling on the side of the highway, in fact, in just on the outskirts of Levin, a little market gardener who was selling her parents' produce that she was growing. And you know, it was at the end of the day and she was packing away and she had bits of produce lying around there. And we went and asked, we said, you know, what do you tend to do with this? And she said, well, she takes it home. She might feed it to some of the livestock that they've got or donate it to some of the friends. And we really picked her brain as to how big the problem was. And she mentioned that she had parents who would go in and do the markets in town, so on a slightly bigger scale than just on the side of the motorway there, and that there was problems every single week, you know, as to produce that they would take and sell at the markets but not be able to sell and have to bring back, you know, and that differed week to week. So if you had a bad weekend with some really rubbish weather, then you only got half the population coming down and buying their groceries that particular week. So there was a lot more rubbish necessarily, or not rubbish, but a lot more waste in particular on those weeks. And I think it was kind of a little challenging getting the message across first, and I suppose the solution that we were trying to provide. I think a lot of growers just assumed we were there just buying any old produce, but we really wanted to focus on fixing the problem of waste in particular. And where it really, I suppose, kicked in for us would have been in September or August, I believe, of 21, where we, 2021 that is, where New Zealand went into another national lockdown. So it was, you know, the second lockdown in which the market vendors weren't able to go and sell their goods, sell their produce or sell whatever it was that they were selling. And so they were down for about 3 months, these market gardeners who were still growing veggies up the coast in Levin, up the coast in Kapiti, but they weren't actually able to go into the weekends and sell it. So, you know, we partnered up at that point with the local council, who were very kind enough to put us in touch with all the vendors, and basically, you know, introduced via email, introduced via numbers, and we went up and we met these market gardens again in Levin and up in the Horowhenua, and actually said, look, hey, whatever you would be taking in, potentially what we could do is take that produce in that's just growing in your fields and being left, put them in boxes and deliver them to homes. And so it started out by doing that. And so we were rushing up and down the motorway in our van, which was, and Katie, totally new to her, she, you know, just dove straight in, watched a few YouTube videos and created, you know, a Shopify page to try and list it. And then what worked really well for us were Facebook community pages. You know, the country was in lockdown, people were at home, they were online, you know, we were able to tell the story via these community pages in terms of what it was we were trying to do. And then the community got talking to one another, word of mouth was massive, and word spread and people were signing up kind of left, right, and center on our Shopify page, and that was kind of the moment, I think, that particular lockdown, when things just went from, wow, okay, this isn't just sort of an idea that we're playing around with. This is actually quite a full on process. At the point we were taking produce back from the coast into our flatmate's house, packing boxes either on his porch or inside, depending on the weather. And, you know, I think we managed that for all but maybe 2 or 3 weeks. And then I had to call up my old school in Wellington and ask if we could borrow a classroom over the weekend. That lasted again all but 2 weeks. And then we had to find somewhere even bigger. So, yeah, it was a very interesting time.
What an amazing moment to have, I guess, the supply and the demand both go boom.
Yep. Yeah.
And then for you two to have to scale up and learn how to do all of those things so quickly. Tell us about kind of the growth you experienced then. Like, what did you go from and to? And then how did you then lock that in to create like a sustainable business?
So we went from packing boxes, I suppose, in a porch or sort of back garden that would have been all but maybe, I don't know, 4 or 5 square meters within a year, to packing produce in boxes in an 800 square meter chilled facility on the outskirts of Wellington. And that took a year. We were so naive to many things, Simon, at the end of the, and we knew that we were needing some support at some point. So, you know, we were given a grant from the council at one point throughout lockdown to warrant another van, so we could, you know, use a second van. The Sustainability Trust in Wellington also donated us their electric van to go and deliver more boxes, as you know, we were running out of vehicles to deliver. And then eventually what we did was we joined an accelerator program with Creative HQ, you know, a government startup initiative in Wellington to really try and learn how we could take Wonky Box from where we were to, I suppose, the next stage. And that's where we were teamed up with about half a dozen, which sounds a bit full on, half a dozen different mentors at the time. You know, people from all sorts of business backgrounds, all sorts of stages of business and so on. And we gelled. We found one individual in particular who we gelled with really, really well. And he had just at the time left and sold his business probably about 6 months before, and the whole mentorship thing was kind of new to him. But, you know, this was a guy that had been stuck into starting his own food businesses for the last sort of last 10 or so years, had done a very successful job of starting and selling these businesses. So he just knew a lot about the food space, scaling businesses and so on, and actually providing a little bit more governance and advice to Katie and I as we were trying to take it to the next level. And that was really, really, yeah, that went down really well.
Ah, that's so magic. And we'll be back in a moment with Angus to talk how they've grown, where things are going, and what a better food system looks like. Sports Spark is proud to partner with the Sustainable Business Network and the Climate Action Toolbox. The free Climate Action Toolbox can provide you with simple step-by-step guides to measure and reduce your emissions. Help lead the way to a low-carbon future for New Zealand. Visit sparklab.co.nz/sustainability to find out more.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Hoki mai anō. Welcome back to Business is Boring, where we're with Angus Sims of Wonkybox. So what scale are you at today? Because you recently pushed into the South Island as well and operations all around the North Island, right?
Yep, that's right. So these days we've got three distribution centres across the country. We've got one in Auckland, one in Wellington, and one in Christchurch. You know, running out of chilled capacity. So we've got, it's come a long way in a very short amount of time. And I suppose our strategy was to always focus on being a localised solution. So, you know, what was great about starting in Wellington was that, you know, we developed these relationships with local suppliers at the coast, and we were committed to helping them. And what we didn't want to do was we didn't want to necessarily lose our local, our local support. So the whole regional structure of Wonkybox, having a site in Auckland, a site in Wellington, and a site in Christchurch, has meant that we're able to supply our boxes in those regions as locally as we can. So, you know, the South Island predominantly will be sourced with local produce from the South Island. The Wellington boxes will be heavily supported by, you know, your root crops, your brassicas from the Kapiti Coast. And then up in Auckland, you know, a lot of our root crops and our brassicas are supported from produce out of the fields of Pukekohe. You know, there are obviously products, a lot of fruits and so on that get mixed around and travel up and down the country. But like our idea was always to have like a locally sourced supply chain into those different distribution centres. The team, we got a team now. It's a pretty full on team from where we started. Katie and I just packing boxes, delivering ourselves, and doing everything to now having about 50 employees on the book. Not all of those are full-time. You know, we've got production facilities with part-time staff and quite a lean full-time team, I would say. So, you know, there's Claire, who runs our marketing, works very closely with Katie on sort of marketing, customer service and systems. And we've got, an ops guy. We've got someone else in the business in the South Island, Anna, supporting myself with supplier relationships. And then we have a very committed, well-invested sort of customer service team as well. We're very conscious of other brands, food box delivery companies in particular that are in the market, and I do think that it's the some of the reputation some of these guys have on their customer service can be questionable. So we wanted to always make sure that we were going above and beyond that. So, you know, we've got four people working customer service around the clock. So Monday, you know, 7 days a week, basically, because we know how important that is for our customers to have a response and have a solution if something goes wrong.
Because it must be really hard to provide a consistent experience where you don't actually know from week to week exactly what the overflow is going to be, right?
Like
there must be a base level that you can kind of plan around. Mm-hmm. But if you truly are that partner to growers who is there to take their excess or unexportable stuff, it must be random as.
Oh yeah, a lot of the time. You know, we go into it's 1 week to the next is it's very unknown. So, you know, there's a model, there's a strategy that we follow, but 1 week to the next could look so totally different. I mean, the thing is with our produce in particular, there is a little bit of consistency because we are purchasing produce within the seasons. So we're big seasonal supporters. But you're right. You know, we're working with growers we're working with smaller orchards, family-run orchards, to, you know, larger commercial-scale growers, exporters, and so on. So we've got very different types of growers that we're working with throughout the supply chain, as far north as sort of Dargaville, as far south as Invercargill, and then, you know, every week, depending on what's available, might depend on what goes in the box and so on. So, yeah, there is a lot of unknown to the weeks that come, but there's a structure too that we follow.
And it's cool if you're like a real chop to the seasons, confident cook type person, right? But I guess some people might be like, oh man, I don't know what to do with 9 parsnips this week.
Absolutely. No, very much so. And that was one of the challenges I think we experienced at the start from our customers, right, was that, hey, look, we're getting produce that we've never purchased before. It's great to know that we're working to reduce waste, but what do we actually do with this? So you know, we've come a long way since then. We've got recipes that we provide our customers each week, depending on which box they're getting. So, you know, we'll understand which produce goes in which boxes. And so what we'll do is we'll tailor-make recipes for our customers should they want to use them. I mean, you know, by no means is it a meal kit service. So should they wish to get some inspiration, they could potentially look at some of the recipes. You know, we're providing them food waste tips, you know, other ideas and so on as well. And I think another thing that we did for a long time, we held on to just having one box as well.
Tell us about your boxes, because I probably, you know, a good distance into the second part of the show, probably should have gone, hey, so what do you actually...
What is our product?
What do you actually sell, people? I'm new to this, sorry.
So now we've now got, gosh, I've got to think about it myself sometimes. So we have 3 different size boxes, which we have in the market that tailor towards different sized households. So, you know, there's couples, young families, which tend to go for our medium-sized boxes. We have a small box, which is basically individuals who might live by themselves, who can still get on the bandwagon. And then we've got our large boxes, which are better suited for sort of larger families and so on. So we've got 3 different size boxes, and we have 2 different types of boxes. We've got a fruit and veggie box, and now we've also got a vegetable-only box, so, you know, those that are a little less fruity and so on. But, you know, we're also working on a lot of cool things at the moment as well, because going back to your point on customers who aren't too sure what to do, I mean, if there might also just be customers that just flat out don't want any particular type of produce, right? So, like, you know, you might have an allergy or something.
To nightshade family, right? Lots of people have allergies to garlic and onion and the like.
Absolutely. So what we're working on at the moment, and in fact we've built it, we just need to launch it, we need to crack on and do it, is an exclusion service. So as a customer, if you're a Wonky Box customer, you can actually go onto your portal or throughout the sign-up process, and you can actually exclude items that you're never going to want. And what we'll promise is that we'll top that product up with something else, basically. So you might not necessarily have the flexibility of choosing what to top it up with, because that would kind of defeat our whole purpose and our doing to begin with. But what we can promise you is that if there's an item that you never want, it's never going to be in your box, and we'll top it up with something else.
What scale are you at now? So having, you know, distribution in 3 places, that must be a lot of grower relationships. It must also be a lot of customers.
Yep. So, you know, we've got growers, as I say, from as far north as Dargaville to Invercargill. We're working with, I think we've been working with 60 odd growers in across the last 2-3 years alone. That number grows each week. It's awesome to finally see growers reaching out to us as a business and actually coming to us, as opposed to us proactively chasing them down. We very much still do chase down new growers, but like I think with the word spreading and PR being such an amazing piece to our model, it's really created a lot of demand from the growers as well as our customers. Yeah, so you know we'll have customers as far south as Gore, which is crazy to think since we started there only in the South Island a couple of months ago now. But all up, we'll have up to, I think when I last checked, I should know this, I should be a little bit more onto it, but about 15,000 households that, you know, are currently active subscribers receiving regular boxes.
And that's cool, but that's not that many out of all the households in New Zealand. You know, like in one stage, that's an amazing business achievement and you now have all the scale to be able to do all this cool stuff. But there's a lot of potential future impact ahead, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. I feel like we've, like you say, we've only just touched the surface on it. I think there's a lot more to come. And the thing is, we're a nationwide service, but we're still working with our courier partners to get into rural postcodes too. That's something that still limits us, unfortunately, but that's a work in progress.
That's so cool that you can be making that kind of impact at scale and still have so much headroom. What is the impact that you're seeing for the growers especially? Because, I mean, I know people who are growers in Pukekohe and, like, they're up at 4, 5, 6 in the morning, 364 days a year. You know, like, they live for the weather forecast. They, you know, absolutely love what they produce. And they're so exposed to so much that having something to help offset some of that variability in life must be a lifeline.
Big time. I think so too. I mean, growers have never had so much risk as they do right now. Like, it's interesting. We talk about eating seasonally, but like, it's so challenging for growers considering that the seasons have never been so difficult. A month ago last year, we had that huge storm, yeah, that huge flood.
100-year rains every month.
Correct. In Dargaville, that wiped out 90% of our local Kumara supply. Things like this, which were so out of season. Growers have got, they're facing other challenges, rising costs of production and everything else as well.
People trying to turn their beautiful soil into townhouses.
Yep. Not to forget that. The developments, of course, as well on all those prime lands. So, you know, that only encourages, to a certain degree, a lot of growers to actually think differently about, you know, their future income and what they want for their kids as well. Like, you know, if it's becoming more challenging to actually grow produce, then what's the best outcome for their family and their livelihood? If developments are in demand, then maybe that's the way forward, you see. So we are seeing a lot of merit for the growers with our service. I think to understand the benefit that we give them, you kind of have to understand the industry itself and what the options are for growers. Growers, they grow predominantly for the supermarkets, right? The supermarkets are 90% of their revenue opportunity. So, you know, they're specifically growing to a certain specification for the supermarkets and the like. You have these intermediaries in the industry, these massive kind of trading wholesalers, which provide competition as well, which is great. And we actually work with them on occasions as well to find opportunities that we may be missing. But one of the biggest challenges for the growers is that a lot of the time when they're sending produce out of the farm, they don't necessarily understand the return they're getting on that produce, because a lot of the produce that's sent out is sent to these markets, which facilitate the competition and facilitate, you know, the selling on behalf of the growers. And the price that the grower receives, the net price that the grower actually gets for their produce, is determined one day to the next, right? Determined by what, by who's willing to pay what on the day,
and by market forces. And the very worst thing is if there's so much supply at the same time, it depresses your potential price for your only crop.
Correct, exactly. And and then growers are at risk of saying, well, do we hold on to the product if there's a lot of supply in the market, or are we better just to send it out and hope that we get at least something for it? With Wonkybox, at least the grower knows that they've got a price before they send it out. So, you know, we can turn around and say, hey, look, we want to make sure we're paying you a fair price. Obviously, it's got to suit our business, and because we are a business and we've got that particular model, but can we get that in, satisfy your needs, knowing what you're sending out, you're getting a return on, which I think adds a lot of value to growers, as opposed to just sending out produce, hoping that they're going to get a return that covers their cost of production and make a little profit. So, like, I think that's a huge merit for partnering up with Wonkybox.
Yeah, and then if there is, those random events that mean you don't fit the model, you can get a return on something that would have been literally ploughed into the field, or
exactly,
you know, best case scenario.
Yep.
So that's really cool. What would you, like, having got into this, like, I think it's, you know, bonkers that it's, I mean, and there's a few really cool initiatives that are happening now to help link up all these parts of the food system so that there isn't this waste. But it kind of seems absolutely wild that there's been so little until so recently. Having got into this world and, you know, getting a view of what a good food system looks like, because it is a great big system, what would you kind of like wave a magic wand and change? Or what does good look like? Or what could we aim for?
I think consumers can definitely help. Like New Zealand households can certainly help. You've just got to change, I suppose, the way you eat in a way. You've got to look at it from a different perspective. I think for years, decades, generations, we've hyped ourselves up, and we've got so much choice as your everyday consumer these days. You know, you can go into a supermarket any time of the year and buy any type of produce you want if you like. The issue that happens is in times like this, where when money's a bit tighter, then suddenly we get a bit frustrated the fact that we've got to pay $10 for a punnet of strawberries when it's actually in the middle of winter. Things like this that like can drive that anger towards the food system and so on. But like I think that sticking to the seasons, eating within seasons, eating local can really help change. And eating what is in supply, like what we've always pushed at Wonky Box is this grower-led eating approach where, you know, we're going to supply households with produce that growers have available, not as opposed to sort of things that are imported and so on. And I think that like there's so many merits to that. There's so many merits to our local producers. It means that there's going to be income throughout, you know, income for our producers. You're going to be eating over time. You'll find that produce will become more affordable if you eat in this particular way. I think being open to what's available as opposed to going and demanding what it is you want, I think is the way forward.
And isn't it funny that eating seasonally is kind of a radical act in our food system when it's like the most natural thing in the world?
For sure.
And how everyone ate and everyone's kind of eating habits have actually evolved for, you know, or you know, adapted to.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And it's a tricky one to go back on, as we know. But I think that households are open to it, you know, like there's a lot of positivity about out there about our service. You know, I suppose having that direct link with our customers, we can get that feedback and we can see that people are definitely on board. So it's possible. We just need to force it on them a bit more, I think.
What would your advice be for people who do see an opportunity to do something a bit better in a system? Because you easily could have just gone, oh, that's a big problem and someone else will be solving it and this is above the scale of what I can make a dent in, right? But you didn't. And as a result, you're now helping stop millions of kilograms of food be wasted and creating all kinds of benefits off the back of it. So that's really cool, right? Like, what would your advice be to people who do have an inkling that there's a difference they could make? And, you know, maybe it could be daunting to start to get in there.
It can be. But I think that there's so much support now, now that there's enough awareness being created in New Zealand. So like we were saying on the podcast a little earlier, like it's surprising almost that these initiatives haven't come on any sooner. But I think that finally there are a lot of support groups, initiatives, even government initiatives that are going to support, you know, this new founding push to do better. So, you know, talk, network with people, I suppose, you know, reach out to people in this space who are doing this. I found when we started that the most valuable thing that we ever did was just talk to a lot of people. You know, the accelerator programs, they've got even more incentive to actually partner up with these bright ideas, people doing cool shit and things like that these days now as well. So, yeah. It can feel like a big burden to take on, but there's so much support locally now, I think, that you know, you just got to do your research, reach out to people, talk to people and really just go for it.
And what will success be for you? As, you know, on one view, 15,000 houses and millions of kilograms of waste diverted is pretty amazing. But then on the other hand, there's so much still to go, right?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. There really is. I think, you know, we started this thing out of a real initiative to push on the food waste, and we really want to see that number creep up. Like 2 million kilograms is a good achievement in a couple of years, but like we really want to see that increase. I think for us as well, it's Wonky Box. We want to make that a brand name in the food waste space. I think success would look like not just growers, but potentially other food producers in other food categories that can look to Wonky Box and supply them with a product that they know is edible but might not necessarily meet a specification for their typical buyers or their typical customers, let's say. I want Wonky Box to be the first to call when a grower or a food producer knows that they've got limited options in their main channels and that they need to find a home for something.
And that's a massive thing, right? Like, you talk to people in the bread world about how much bread is wasted mm-hmm. every day mm-hmm. and you're like, your brain can't even comprehend this amount of stuff, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's like, well, thank you for sharing the story so far. And yeah, can't wait to see where you take it next. And everyone, yeah, get on and check out the Wonky Box near you.
Thanks, Simon. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for joining us, Angus. Thank you very much to you for having us along in your ears. And thank you to everyone who helps make this happen, like our producer, Te Aihe Butler. If you like what we do, please do rate, follow, leave a review, all of that kind of stuff. It really does help. E no hora.
From the Spin-Off Podcast Network, that was Business is Boring. Brought to you by Spark Lab. Make sure you're following Business is Boring wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information on Spark Lab, visit sparklab.co.nz.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.